Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Body and the Beast podcast. Coming straight into your ears for the next few hours are your awesome hosts, Dan Meredith and Jamie Alderton.
Howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Body and the Beast. I am your body, Jamie Alderton.
And I am your beast, Dan Meredith. And today we're going to get greedy. Or not.
We are indeed. Episode 2 of our 7 Deadly Sins is all about greed, Mr. Meredith. And we've got lots of different things to speak about when it comes to greed. And the first thing that I wanted to kind of ask you about is this concept of enough. Enough. When is enough, Mr. Meredith?
Right. Do you know what? I have struggled with this earlier on in my career. I've always been, you know, open that I've had, you know, ups and downs and stuff. It's part of my history. Not positive or negative. It's just a thing. It's just a thing. But I often said to myself, I'd set goals and I would say, when I earned this amount, I'll be happy. When I earn that amount, I'll be happy. When I'll have this watch, car, toy, motorbike, credibility, whatever. And I'd made this mistake of anchoring my, you know, my happiness, my worth, my, you know, my eligibility, my viability as a human being, as a potential mate, as a someone on hitting some of these milestones, which is not good, especially when you hit every single fucking one after the other. And I remember, you know, my first target was to make a couple of grand a month for my first online business. Then it was to get to, you know, the mythical six-figure turnover. So I was going for, like, you know, 10k per month. Then it was my next 100k month. Then it was my first seven-figure year. Then it was my first seven-figure year profit. All this kind of, you know, it kept going. And you know what? I kept going and going and going to the point where I realized that more didn't necessarily equate to happy. And especially as I started working with even more successful people, you know, people, you know, who had a lot. There was a lot of people who, on the again, we always talk about, you know, what you see on the outside versus what's on the inside, to all extents and purposes, had everything you could possibly want. But they wanted more and more and more, and they were never satisfied. They were never happy. It was never good enough. There was never enough money. And I had a friend who was in London, and she had a kind of, how can I explain her job? She basically was kind of like a hostess in kind of like high-end nightclubs, that sort of thing. So very much like looking after the VIPs and that sort of thing. So she got to know a lot of real high rollers, you know, big, connected, like comically wealthy people. And I remember her telling me that so many of them were just dead inside. They're just empty because nothing was ever good enough. They were never happy. They always wanted more. They wanted more cash, more shiny things, more cars, more homes. Yet they weren't happy. And obviously some of them were, and I've got some very successful clients now who are both successful and really happy. But more, having more, doesn't always necessarily mean you're going to get what you want at the end of it. So it's not always more.
Yeah, and there's this old quote about an author going to a billionaire's house, very successful author, and his friend goes to him. So what do you think of this, that the guy whose house we're in right now makes more money in a day than your best-selling book has ever made in a lifetime? And the author turns around and goes, well, I have something that he'll never have. And his friend talks around and goes, and what might that be? And he says, enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a great thing, because the first thing that popped to my mind, the last thing I was thinking I was going to talk about on a podcast on greed is crypto. Hell.
Right, okay.
But Bitcoin's up 30% this month. So a lot of people who are, you know, crypto's been pretty much dead for the last year, 18 months. So everyone's starting to talk a bit more about it. But Bitcoin runs on this thing, which a lot of people check, called the fear and greed scale. And what it is just basically a scale that when it's high, on the greed. It means that maybe don't buy the stuff because it's really high at the moment and it's going to fall. And the fear is, of course, oh, it's dropping, so maybe be a bit more greedy with this thing. But then the reason that I just said that is that a lot of greed comes from fear. So a lot of overindulgence of not things not being enough is this fear that if they don't get as much of it now as consistently as possible, that there's not going to be any left. And I see this with success. And I talk a lot about this when it comes to greed. It's the fact that they think, I'm onto something now, so I need to not rest until I have more than, you know, more than 10 people need, because it's going to run out. And when it comes to success, when it comes to money, when it comes to wealth, when it comes to all of these things, they are infinite games. And Simon Sinek talks about this, about finite games and infinite games. And this is the most important thing. I remember popping across a TikTok, and it kind of levels you out when you think of this. If you don't think that you haven't got enough money, or you need to do this, or need to have more, in about 100 years, everything that you own will not exist. Like, your house, somebody else will be living in. Your car that you spent all your money on will be non-existent. All the material items that you had will be gone. The only thing that people will remember about you is maybe a photograph, and give it another 50 years and that will be gone too. So why are you accumulating all of these fucking things, and what for? And a lot of the time this greed comes from this fear that somebody is going to take it all from you. And actually, this is what drives a lot of people that are super successful these days. It's not the fact that, you know, they are greedy, because they are, but it comes from this level of worry and fear that if they stop, everything that they have right now will disappear. And I've had very much the opposite effect over the years, because I've had that fear come true. I've lost in the last 10 years, I've lost everything twice. And I'm still standing. I'm still here. I've built it all up because there was nothing to lose per se. There was money, there was things, but one thing that I didn't lose is my knowledge, skills, and experience. And I think that's where a lot of people need to understand that if you have built those things, there's no need to be greedy, because you've built those things over many, many years, which means that if the inevitable happened and you lost everything, it won't be long before you get it back. And I love a Jim Rohn quote. He always says, everyone should aspire to become a millionaire, not for the £1 million, but for the kind of person that you need to become to earn that kind of money. And it's, of course, building up that knowledge, skills, and experience.
And I will say on that as well, like, if you're listening and you're not where you need to be, and, you know, we're kind of, you know, it is, you know, month to month, and you are struggling and you do need, you genuinely need more, then fucking go for it. Okay, I just want to make that really clear. No one's going to give you permission. No one is going to. When you're starting out, honestly, you'll get people who, we obviously said last time about asking for help in the Pride episode, but realistically, it's you versus the market, the world, the economy, whatever. Just go get it. Go out there and get what you need. But there's a quote, it's not a quote, sorry, there's a study that is very important to me and very close to my heart, because it's linked with a lot of what I'm doing right now, whilst I'm taking the sort of social sabbatical, and that is the International Happiness Index. And it's kind of a study, it's been done a couple of times. But effectively, now you might be thinking, oh, well, that's quite a lot of money, or it might be not very much money. I don't know, it depends on where you are. But effectively, they found that people's happiness peaked at around sort of mid-70,000. That's like a household income. And then it kind of literally very, very slowly crawled up to about 124, 126 from memory. Now, that's still a lot of money. And I'll just say, if you ever get to the 120 plus bracket, you're in the top 1% of the UK. So again, with hard work and time and energy, you can actually get yourself to some pretty amazing levels if you go for it. And it does require time and work and skill accumulation, as well as obviously being able to get results for people. But understanding that level of success does come with a price, and it will get to a point, if you keep working, you will get to a point where it's going to involve, a lot of sweat equity, there's a lot of stress, a lot of money in reinvested energy, you're going to be tired. It does take effort to get, up a different level. I'm going through it right now. I don't need to, I'm choosing to, because I've got another, it's more family orientated as well as impact things that I want to do. But understanding that, again, sort of, if you anchor your, your happiness and all this kind of stuff to, whatever income, whatever more of something, okay, you're often gonna feel pretty shitty about it. If you're not where you need to be, like if you are struggling, go for it. But understand when it does get to a point when there's only, I remember at one point I had in my garage, three motorbikes and two jet skis, and I remember walking down, and they're all Ducatis and racing jet, they're all really nice ones, okay? And I remember just laughing to myself, thinking, what am I doing? I've got one ass. I obviously just would take, it was silly. It was silly, some of the things that I'd spent money on at the time, because I thought these things, having more of this stuff would make me happy. And yeah, I've got a nice home now, I've got a nice car, I've got a nice watch. I've got a few nice things, which I love, which I'm really, really proud of. I work for them. I made them a reality. But outside of that, I'm good. I don't have any, and that's maybe just I've got, I'm 43. I'm a little older now, but I've no desire to kind of get things just to show off or say to someone else, well, look what I've got, or keep up with the Joneses or any of that bullshit. Because it's a zero-sum game. There's always someone with more than you. There always is. You're never going to win.
Yeah, and this kind of concept of enough, it comes back to what I'm saying is that a lot of people haven't structured out realistic numbers for what they need in order to be happy. And, we talk about this all the time, that what gets measured gets managed. But I don't know many people who sit down and go, right, what is the number that I need to see in the bank? Mm-hmm. To be able to pay my bills, to be able to have a decent social life and do the things that I want to do, to have a couple of nice holidays a year, to invest in my future percentage each time, and have that level of contentness without that anxiety. Because I'll tell you now, I never used to get anxiety until like mid 30s, and so my business started to get bigger, and the what tends to happen is as your business gets bigger, so does the letter from the HMRC. I'd say these days the biggest thing that gets me the biggest amount of anxiety is seeing that brown envelope.
Swear on my mother's life, I was just about to say, even though I know I've got money aside, I'm well ahead, I've prepaid everything, I kind of, as many entrepreneurs do, many of us have that year where we're like, oh no, I forgot to put enough aside. Okay, had that year, learned from my mistakes, made sure everything was paid, all above board, all that kind of good stuff. So I'm well ahead. I'm well ahead of where I need to be. I'm prepaid, in fact, ahead of where I need to be on everything. But every time I see a brown letter, my asshole twitches. There is just, if you're self-employed or you have your own company, there's just nothing good. There's nothing good in a brown letter. It's nothing good. And if you want to fuck with people.
Let
me finish this. If you want to fuck with people, get some of those brown letters and just send your friend, literally send them a letter with final notice stamped on it in red or something, and just honestly, it'll destroy them. Sorry, mate, you were saying.
Yeah, I've had one, and it was a tax rebate, and it was like, oh, finally some good news from the HMRC. But they're like a evil scratch card.
Evil scratch card. Expression.
Yeah, but like a scratch park card, you have a certain level of anticipation because you want to find out whether you've won. Whereas the HMRC letter, you have this certain anticipation to open it to see how much you've been fucked over this quarter.
Yes. And you know, you can't see this if you're listening, but if Jamie makes a clip out of this, the irony of what you said, Jamie, is not lost on me. I am currently holding up, I think, 16 different scratch cards because I go on a little, where I live on the waterfront of where I live, and I've got this little thing where I just, there's these ones I like, and me and Jamie have had this discussion. I think I've mentioned it on a podcast, but you know, there's this one here. This is my favorite one. 4 top prizes of $100,000 a month for a year. Now, bear in mind, I've also got this one where you can win 2 million. But for me, the ones of winning $100,000 a month, just like the idea, just makes me happy. So every time I go round, if I'm in a really good mood, or in a really bad, I just buy it. I've literally got all these fucking, they just stick into a pile, and then I just have a scratch fury. I have no idea why I've shared that. Listen, I have cut out dangerous women, lethal transportation, alcohol, drugs. What else have I cut out of? Made a lot of junk food, like everything. There is, I've cut it all out. Okay? Let me have my scratch cards. That's all I want.
It's weird. Anna buys those massive scratch cards, and they piss me off because she likes the scratch cards that take ages to scratch because she's like thinks it's worth more money. And I'm like, no, I want and it fucks me off. You know, like the worst scratch cards in the world are the bingo ones because you've actually got to use your brain. I'm just like,
I won't do them. They do my tits in.
No, she loves them because I'm like, no, I'd rather just one plain square and I scratch it off and it just tells me if I've won or not. Just stop fucking around. Just give me the answer.
I'm looking at them now. All I want to do is find, like I said, there's one. I just want to, I'd love, the thing is, I'd still work. I mean, obviously that's not enough to retire off of and stop with, but in my head, I've pre-spent my $100,000 a month. For the first, I've already pre-spent. If someone just gives me, hey, go down, have an extra 100,000 a month, I already know what I do. And we talk about, you know, obviously we're talking about greed today. So it's kind of like a nice, fun little segue on that one. I mean, in my head, you know, I would realistically, you know, just put the first month with just any debts that there were. There's not any at the moment, but I clear the decks. Second month, I would absolutely fucking blast. Third month, I'd kind of, you know, basically give to some good people, and the rest of it, I just put away smartly. Like, if you had $100,000 a month to spend, right? What would you do with it, Jay?
What would I do? It's a very interesting thing because where I go with stuff like this is go, what would I do with it, and then go, well, what's stopping me from doing that? And that's the reality of what do I need to do in my business to be able to generate that, to be able to have that. But at the same time, you know. As you said, clear the decks on some stuff. I would hire more people. I would use that money to hire more people to do some of the stuff which I literally do not want to do anymore within my business.
I think I'd hire a few people as well, would you?
a cleaner, yeah?
another cleaner. That's precisely what I meant.
And it's just, you know, the main focus for me this day and age is, you know, being able to outsource some stuff so I don't need to think about it, so I can do more of the stuff that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And it's just having, you know, it just buys more freedom. And that's the thing about when you look at material items, and I remember doing a video on this and went viral, and I said everyone aspires to have a Lamborghini, but then they don't forget that with lifestyle creep. And what I mean by that is if you just got given £250,000 Lamborghini and you live in a 3-bedroom semi-detached house in the Midlands, it's going to be a kind of an awkward thing, really, because if you've, like me, got quite a steep curb that goes up towards your house, I have anxiety twice a day. First, driving that fucking thing out of my driveway to make sure I don't scuff it. And secondly, driving back in my driveway to make sure that I don't scuff it. So although I now have this incredible dream car, I'm now presented with 14 extra anxiety moments a week. So you understand the philosophical wisdom from Ice Cube, and he says more money, more problems. And it's so true, because sometimes when you do, you know, accumulate more materialistic items, you're just adding more fog, confusion, fear, and anxiety to your plate. And that is something, as I get older, I'm focused on getting off my plate. When it comes to having that 100 grand a month, so to speak, the first thing doesn't come to mind of how many items can I buy. It's how can I get rid of some things so I can get more time back and more freedom and less anxiety.
That's nice, mate. I like that. And also understand as well, I mean, it gets, like I said, my advice to all of you, whether you're starting out on the journey, already successful, you know, if you're in that latter one, is, you know, I'll come to that in a second, but, you know, yeah, please do go for everything you want to get and push to give yourself and your family and your loved ones a life that you would not have. You know, I'm sort of like the first person in my family to go to uni, first person, as far as I'm aware, to have their own business. You know, obviously don't know how many generations go back, but, you know, I kind of decided I was going to be the mold breaker, and I was going to say, right, well, what can I do? What can I create? You know, how can I help not only, you know, myself, but my loved ones and, you know, other people as well. But it does, you know, push, strive for everything and go for everything, but also understand there's this thing called hedonic adaptation where you get things and it becomes really, really normal for you. You know, I remember when I got my first, you know, for me, and I know a lot of guys are like this as well, because as chaps, there's not, you know, it's generally like car, watch, house. There's not many things we can have that are like nice accessories. There's not lots of stuff like, there's a lot of different things for ladies, for example. But, you know, for me, I've always loved my watches. You know, my dad said to me, I remember getting it was my 13th birthday, and it was a steel, gold, and blue-faced metal watch. It's from Argos. And it was, I loved that watch. It was beautiful. I think it was probably about £50, I think, which, you know, but as a 13-year-old back in the day, mum and dad did not have much money, so I loved that watch. And it basically was a, you know, a good kind of copy of a Rolex Submariner. And, you know, my dad told me what that was. My dad loved his watches, you know, didn't have the money to have a fancy watch, but he kind of said, you know, if you could, and he told me this as a little boy, he said, if you could ever go into, you know, a watch shop and just buy a Rolex, if you've got Rolex on your arm, son, you've made it. And that just stayed in my head. And it's, you know, and I eventually did do that. I bought that exact steel, gold, and blue Submariner Rolex when I was 36. And I was so proud of that. So I was really proud of it. It's something I remember sharing it with my dad, and there's a message on my Facebook wall. My dad was, you know, so proud of me. I was proud of, you know, something is the first thing I'd done sort of for me, like as a little treat. I've just been working and working and working. And, you know, again, you can think, if you're listening, that's vulgar, that's okay. You know, but for me, you know, I'd made sure I'd done some good things with it. And then when it was my turn, I was like, I've always wanted this. You know, this is for someone I've wanted for like 25 plus years, and I got it. I remember wearing it for the first time, and it was like, I was like, honestly, I was like holding my hand out in front of me. I was like so conscious of ever bumping into it. And it became the watch I used to, like, it made me feel special. So I wore it every day. It was my day watch, okay? Scroll forward a month. I'm going to the gym in it. It's, you know, I've banged it a couple of times. Not that, they're quite tough. But, you know, it was a beautiful watch. I loved it. I was proud of it. But that initial feeling of needing that, like, wow, okay, it was a, you know, different, it wasn't to show off, there was another meaning behind it, but I was really proud of having it. And I still have it to this day. It's just locked away. It's locked away in a safe deposit box. It's just something that I just have.
Yeah, and I've got a similar story to that, Dan. I mean, I remember being 13, being at college where I was, and looking at these Breitling watches, always wanted a Breitling watch. And I said, one day when I'm successful, I'll go in and buy one of those. And a couple of years ago, I did. Went in, bought the one that I wanted, and showed it. Yeah, really nice one. And then reality hits, and I've got my Apple Watch. I love my Apple Watch. It tracks my steps. I can go on the tube and contactless and everything. And every time I wore the watch, it was just a hindrance to my day to day. You know, it was. I loved the watch and it was great. But in the space of the 2 years I had it, I probably wore it about 9 or 10 times. I just got to a point where I was just like, it's sitting on my side. I don't, you know, it's a hindrance when I wear it. It's nice to have had it, but I sold it. And I was just like, because I'm not using it. And I think an important thing with that is that I would have done exactly the same thing. And the reason I've done exactly the same thing is it's nice to have those aspirations for those material items and to have those stories of them too. And actually go out and have those things, get those things and buy those things for the very reason of actually understanding that a lot of the things which you desire, when you actually have them, that's when the real lesson comes, because you realize you don't actually need them. So, you know, I would still aspire to have that dream and have those things and achieve those things. Because once again, it's like, until you have the money in the bank, until you have those material items, it's only then that you realize how much you don't need them.
And it's understanding what you're doing it for as well, Jay. So more, we said, like, isn't necessarily good, but more can sometimes be exactly what you need. Like, for example, one of the things, you know, I remember having a conversation with a confidant, a mutual friend of ours. And, you know, when I started out, I just wanted to help people. It was literally a case of, I didn't have much help, you know, doing this whole online entrepreneurship business, general business thing, you know, both offline and online. And I also felt really fucking lonely as well. I found it very lonely. I found it very isolating. And there were some really hard days where I felt, you know, just like no one gave a shit about me. So I started doing the whole online thing and bringing people together. And that's what I wanted to do. And then I remember, you know, at the sort of peak of my success when the book was going crazy, yeah, it did go to my head a little bit. I'm not even going to lie, because suddenly I've gone from nothing to something and earning, you know, money that I never thought I'd do in a lifetime. You know, it was insane. And I really, you know, I don't regret the things I did then or what I spent money on or how I invested myself. It was just, I do remember thinking, you know, I've gone off on a tangent there, but off this conversation, I remembered kind of like why I started again. And that's sort of something I had earlier this year, and that's sort of working towards now, working on, you know, that bringing people together, that loneliness piece and that helpful piece. So you can still have a lot of money. You can make really good income. You can make an awful lot of money by doing good and bringing people together and actually, you know, creating something of substance and of value. So there's nothing wrong with that. With the money that I'm planning on generating, I'm going to be investing that in a different area. And the first area is going to be for a different part of my future, something I've not considered, which I want to do, which is for a Dan, which doesn't exist yet. And hopefully he will at some point soon. Then it's going to be, you know, to address some of the problems I see in the entrepreneurship industry. And, you know, with people like my little sister who has her own, you know, special needs and some of the problems there. So do I want more? Yeah, I want lots more. But I know what I'm going to do with it, because I now am at a position where if you were to say, you know, Dan, here's an X amount extra per month, but you said, you know what, you're going to have to work, I don't know, say another 20 hours a week for some crazy sum, I'll be like, nah, you're okay. You're good, because I value, you know, I worked to get my time back. So I worked very hard, did long hours, got things in place, bought my time back, and now I've got a nice mix of, I mentioned before, of like work and life. That's what I wanted. I'm now going to have to go up a gear. So I'm going to make some sacrifices to my time, to my energy. I've cut a lot of things out of my life. So do I want lots more? Yeah, I do. I want lots more as of recording this. And that's what I'm working towards. But that lots, all being well, if I've done my job correctly, is generated off of helping people, making a difference, bringing some into the market, which I think is required. And then the money that I can get from that is going to be put into things which are going to make more of a difference. And it's this kind of ripple effect that I'm looking to do. So yes, so I don't want people here thinking that money is bad, having money is bad, being wealthy is bad, wanting to be rich, successful, have nice things. There is absolutely nothing wrong with it. You should go for it. But it does get to a point where if that's all you want and you just say, I want to earn this amount, I want this car, I want this house, I want this thing, go for it. Get it, see how you feel. That's my advice.
Yeah, 100%. I always remember this quote of Naval Ravikant. It says, a desire is a contract you make with yourself to be unhappy until you get what you want.
Oh,
and Lord. And a lot of that is that people actually don't know why they want stuff. And a lot of the reasons that they do want stuff is because they think that they'll be happy. So they'll get something and get an emotion. What you should seek from these things is more freedom, freedom to think, freedom to express yourself, freedom to do actually the things that you want to do. And having more things doesn't necessarily equate to that. More money equals more problems, unless you're focused on having that more money to solve other people's problems or your time problems. So greed, the answer to greed for me is gratitude. Sometimes reflecting on the things that you already have, because sometimes we forget that most of the things that do make us happy are, you know, either sitting or standing right in front of us. And we tend to ignore them because we're focused on the future instead of being aware of the present. Ladies and gents, that is our second of our 7 episode series, this one being on greed. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please share, please let us know. We love it when you share your comments and our posts on this podcast. It really means a lot to us. But I have been your body, Jamie Alderton.
And I've been your beast, Dan Meredith. Take care.